Good evening, everyone. You're joining us on Backflips and Nerds. It's episode 91 of Backflips and Nerds, and we're going to do the NL West Roundtable. It's the baseball podcast of the British Twist. You can find us on Twitter at Backflips_Nerds. I'm your host, Tom Pringle. Yeah, we're going to do the roundtable tonight, but it's not really going to be a roundtable, more of an oblong one, because there's only two of us, I'm afraid. So representing the plucky, old, knackered, wavered, traded, rubbish San Francisco Giants is Darius Austin. How are you?
I'm doing well. Isn't it a line, really, if there's just two of us?
I suppose. Well, I'm trying to think of tables. I'm surely it's a rectangle one. It's almost like that grand hall type table where we're sitting opposite ends.
We're the estranged couple sat like 40 feet away from each other.
Okay. We're not on our phones, though. No phones at the dinner table. That's a rule my daughter always likes to remind me of. No phones at the dinner table.
Sat in silence, the scraping of cutlery on the plate. Yeah.
And then the odd... excuse me.
Well, this is going to be a great pod.
It's going to be amazing because I get to talk about the Padres, which clearly is one of my favourite subjects in the world. So if you're not familiar with the round tables we're doing in the past, we go in reverse order the standings. And I've just lost the standings, even though I know them. I should really know them. So it's going to start off with me talking about the Padres, because they're at the bottom of the standings. They have a 60-92 record at the moment. They are 24 games off first place and have playoff odds of 0.0% because they are eliminated. I think we predicted them at 72 wins. There are 10 games left in the season, so clearly we're going to be wrong by at least two games at the moment. They're done for the year. We know that. As expected, their rotation wasn't particularly good. They had a load of 1-year deals to try and recoup some prospects back on that, and I don't think they really got anything in terms of their rotation. And the bullpen side of things, clearly they got Francisco Mejia for Simba and Brad Hand. So there's some things that went right for them in that sense. The bullpen has actually been really good. Even in the second half of the season, without Brad Hand and Simba, they've actually been pretty lights out. It's just, unfortunately, the rotation and the hitters haven't been particularly good. However, the team have seen some good prospects come up in terms of Mejia, who obviously they traded for. You've also got Urias, who came up and has joined the team. He's been looking quite good. Unfortunately, he's now out with a hamstring injury. There's lots of calls for more rotation pieces to come up. I think Joe Lucchese was called up quite early. However, it wasn't really when they're expecting to come up and stay up. But he's actually held his own and been pretty good. So I think going into next year, the team could look stronger. I mean, Darius and I gave Darius a bit of ribbon at the start of the year saying that, you know, they will be contending for a postseason position in 2020, I believe I said. Might have even been 19.
Did you say wild card next year and then division 2020 maybe?
Yeah, I mean that's probably gonna be a bit much. It depends. It depends what they do in the offseason. They've got some cash available. There are plenty of free agents out there. They need to tie up that rotation. That's the big one for them. I mean, there's Daz Keuchel is available as a free agent next year. I'm not quite sure he's gonna suit Petco that well. Maybe Drew Pomeranz will go back there as he's a free agent. Or my two favorites, clearly Wade Miley or Clay Buchholz. But I think that's for the Padres. I mean, it's the year they kind of expected. They were going to bring up a few prospects, which they have done. Unfortunately, seeing the likes of Dinelson Lamet go down before the season even started was pretty disappointing for them. But I think, you know what? It's been an okay season. It's been what they expected. I don't know if you've got any thoughts, Darius.
No, I think, although we're not going to get the win prediction right, I think this is pretty much the season we thought they were going to have. You know, I'm not going to lose too much sleep over being five wins out. I think that pretty much means you were right. Very young team, and all the players have kind of, you know, performed as we thought, really. I didn't think Eric Hosmer would be quite this bad, but I think we all agreed that the contract was a bit much. You've been worried about the Will Myers deal for a while. But as you say, there are a lot of exciting young players, both in the majors now and I think on the way. I mean, this is a really, really stacked farm, isn't it? And there's probably, I think, you know, I think the Fangraphs had something like 43 guys. I think they rank everybody over a 40 future value. And the Padres had some ludicrous number of players on it because they just have such a deep system. And I think they've even found guys like Chris Paddock this year, who were probably not on that list. So there's just an absolute ton on the way.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting time for them. And it'll be interesting to see what they do with these prospects. In the past, I know they've traded them for some big name pieces like big game James. And it's not particularly gone that well for them. So it's going to depend what AJ Preller likes to do. He went out and got Kimbrel before and sort of not destroyed the farm system, but hammered it quite a lot and then took on the contract of, what was his name? Was it BJ Upton? No, Melvin Upton Jr. That was it, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, same guy.
Yeah, true. Yeah. but he then came in and kind of hamstrung the team a little bit in terms of money. But we'll see. I think it'd be an interesting future. I don't think they'll be bottom of the division next year. That's for sure. Maybe wild cards a little bit out there for me. But then again, depends on the offseason. They could go out and get Harper and Machado. You never know. Right, should we talk about your Giants then? So next up in the division, so in fourth place, the Giants at 72-80. They're 12 games back from the leaders, and their playoff odds are 0.0%, because I believe, yeah, they're out as well, aren't they? They're done.
They are mathematically eliminated now, yeah.
So they are officially done. Do you want to chat about your Giants, how you think it's gone and going forward, etc.?
Yeah, I mean, I never really felt like there was a huge chance this season. Like they stuck around for a while, just sort of in that mix. The NL West was pretty close for a long time. And we were saying before we came on that I didn't really think they were that distinguishable from the Rockies. And if you look at the playoff odds graph, that kind of bears out till like sort of mid-July. They were basically about the same, kind of their ups and downs, you know, sort of hovering around the same place. And then, yeah, they've just really tailed off. Posey's obviously had the hip surgery, so he's out for the year. And now, well, you look at the lineup and they've lost the three guys I think any Giants fan would agree were their best hitters. Posey's out with injury, Belt's out with an injury, and Andrew McCutchen obviously got traded to the Yankees. This lineup, most days now, you know, Belt's in and out with his knee issue, but a lot of days recently, it's just been a bunch of guys who aren't even average hitters. So it's kind of depressing on that front. And then Cueto went down with the Tommy John as well. Bumgarner really doesn't look like old Bumgarner either, even though his ERA looks fine. And so it's kind of been a couple of surprising back end of the rotation guys who've really been the only optimistic spots. Derek Rodriguez, particularly, son of Pudge, has really surprised a lot of people. He wasn't even a pitcher until a couple of years ago. He's a converted outfielder. And then Derek Holland, of all people, has probably been the best starter in the rotation. Basically made pretty much every turn, 3.5 ERA. Actually got strikeouts again. I think he's shifted across the rubber, which seems to have brought about a nice change. And this happens to the Giants a lot. Sort of the Chris Heston type of guy that you just think isn't going to really be anything. And suddenly they pop up and turn in like a sort of nice number three, number four start of season, which is great when you've got guys like Bumgarner and Cueto actually pitching every week. But when the injuries hit and the performance drops off, it doesn't really work out so much. So yeah, it's not a great time to be a Giants fan with the age of this roster. And we don't have any prospects, unlike the Padres. So I'm not particularly optimistic about next year.
How long do you think it's going to take them to the rebuild? I know it's a pretty open and wild question, but is this something you're going to be bottom dwellers for a while? Or I mean, the Giants are likely to spend money, aren't they? They've already proven that they're going to spend money. So I can't see them being down there for too long.
Yeah, they don't really like to do the proper tear down thing. They've like not really been the worst team in the league or the best team in the league most of the time I've been a Giants fan. They spend a lot of time kind of, you know, one year they'll be mid-70s and wins, and next year they'll maybe pop up and be mid to high 80s and get in the wild card game or, you know, hover around the division lead. So they seem to like to do that. You know, they retain a lot of guys. That's been a real trademark of this regime, that they like to bring guys back, which I think has ended up costing them in a lot of cases. So we basically gave my favorite Tim Lincecum a contract because he'd been great in the past, which obviously I love Timmy. So great to see him back, but that didn't work out at all. They do that kind of thing a lot. So I'm a little bit dubious about what they'll do in the off season. Obviously, trading McCutchen was a kind of no-brainer once they gave up on the year. But it will be interesting to see what they do with guys like Bumgarner, with guys like, I think, Brandon Belt, even, who is, you know, one of the few guys you can really count on for offense on this team, and is still under several years of team control. If they're looking at a long-term rebuild, that's probably the kind of guy I'd see them trading. But whether they actually do it or not, I think it would go against a lot of their behavior over the past few years. And they're kind of stuck with Cueto, who's going to basically be out most of next year as well. And he's still under contract for a few years. So it's a difficult spot to be in, I think. And even I think Elliot Ramos, who was the prospect everybody was super excited about coming into the year, has not had the kind of season that we might have thought he would. So that kind of one hope that we were finally going to get a top-end prospect coming through the system doesn't seem to have panned out so much. But as you say, they have money. It's not really a problem for them. Although some of these contracts aren't great, I think they'll probably still go out and try and spend some things that, you know, try and hang around in the wildcard race a bit. And then maybe we'll look at if some of these guys rehabilitate their value a bit, or maybe if teams aren't really looking at Bumgarner's peripherals, they'll be able to move him for something decent over the offseason. But the other problem with this year is a lot of these guys are kind of not at the peak of their value right now. So it's also not really a great time to go out and trade many of them.
Yeah. I think we look at Brandon Belt, you mentioned him earlier. I mean, he was on fire at one point during the season. I think it kind of showed the Giants weren't going to tear down, because there's not even a rumor of him getting moved. And like you say, if you're going to do a proper tear down, that's the time to do it. When someone's on fire, get rid of them. I don't know. I suppose they're going to spend money. Like you say, they're not a team that's going to just sit back and sit at the bottom of the division. I think they're going to go out and do it in a kind of Padre style way of getting those 1 year deals and then try and shift them if they can for better players, better prospects, as the season goes on, and see how it goes. Out of interest, have you seen how Andrew McCutchen is doing in New York? Because I had no idea. I mentioned before the pod started the fact that the last 2 weeks I've been crazy busy with work, and I've watched, I'd say, about 2 minutes of baseball, which I did tonight. I had no idea how McCutchen was doing. Do you know how he's doing?
Yeah, he's been all right, actually. I think not hitting for a ton of average, but he's hit a couple of big home runs for them.
I was genuinely surprised. Like, I just loaded up his stats there. So since the 1st of September is when he's played his first game for the Yankees, I was looking down the box score, just thinking, oh, yeah, he looks okay. But then you look at he's got a WRC plus of 143. He's hit four home runs. And he's grabbed quite a few walks there as well. He's got a 20% walk rate. I know it's extremely small sample size, but I thought he was doing better than I actually thought. Like, you don't see him sort of pop up. You know, you get the players pop up on Twitter or Instagram where he's got a picture of them having a great night and all the stuff they've done. I just don't see anything in McCutchen. And it's not like I just completely block Yankees Twitter. It's all on there.
Yeah. This is possibly a function of that division not really being in question anymore. I don't know if people are, you know, even though it is the Yankees, maybe that's just not that big a deal right now, because everyone kind of knows that it's over, and it's been over for a little while. And so these 15 games or so that he's played for the Yankees have probably been pretty low leverage in terms of the divisional race. The only thing they're trying to do really is make sure they don't play the wild card game in Oakland. So perhaps that's had a bit of an effect on how much coverage he's getting.
Yeah, and we're talking about it before we started recording as well. The fact that I haven't watched much baseball in the last 2 weeks, and do you know what? I've had no real impetus to go and watch it. It's just so much seems tied up. And I know this division is still in a race, and the AL West is in a bit of a race still as well, and you've still got the wild cards slots to tie up. And I don't know. I felt that a lot of people talk about the June, July slump and they all get a bit bored of it, and baseball's the only sport out there at the time being. But I feel this bit is probably the worst bit of the season for me, waiting for the postseason to start. And I'm kind of lucky in the sense that the two teams that I follow and enjoy, one of them is a lock for the postseason and potentially going to win the division very, very soon. And the other team's completely out of it. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I don't know if you feel like that as well.
I think to a certain extent with the AL, certainly the East and the Central, we've known that Cleveland has been winning the Central for months. I won't harp on that anymore, but they've obviously had that division locked up for a long, long time, which does take away a bit of the intrigue there, even though they've got some really great players. The Red Sox, they had that little tiny wobble, didn't they? I think that you got ever so slightly nervous about and told me to stop making jokes about the Yankees. But really, they haven't really been under threat for quite some time. So it's only been Oakland and Houston that have kind of kept that interesting, with the Mariners dropping off as well. And then, yeah, now the NL races seem to be starting to fade a little bit as well. And kind of we thought, well, are we going to go into the last week with seven or eight teams all within a few games of each other? And depending on how the next few days go, it's possible we could go into next week with almost everything decided, which is not what we want to see. So hopefully the next few days of results bring it back closer, I think.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, let's talk about one of those potential teams then. So the D-backs. They're currently 78-74. They're six games back. Fangraphs has them with playoff odds of 0.3%. I mean, technically they're still in it. I think they are five games have been eliminated anyway. So they're pretty much out of it, really. I think their last 10, they've lost eight out of the last 10. And they've lost the last four on the bounce as well. It's not looking good for them. Their season, I've grabbed a load of stats, and I'll be honest, I haven't watched much D-backs baseball. I just tried to collate some stats for them and try and work out their season. But, I mean, they've got a team weighted runs created plus, so 100 being average, of 84 for the season. That's the second, joint second worst in all of baseball, alongside the Mets, the Padres and the Marlins. That's pretty disastrous, really. I mean, we know the humidor was brought in to Arizona, and people worried about the offensive side of the ball and would they still be able to create runs, and it seems like it's had quite a big effect. I mean, without doing my best Jeff Lindbergh, I can't even get there. Was it John the other week? Couldn't even think of Jeff's name.
It was, yeah.
I'll start again. Jeff Sullivan. I'll do my best Jeff Sullivan impression there. So I'll go through each month and then say what position they are in WRC plus and what their WRC plus was. So March, April, they were 19th in majors with a WRC plus of 92. Remember, 100 is average. Below that is bad. Above that is great. In May, they were dead last with a WRC plus of 50. The next worst was the Padres at 77. I mean, it shows how bad that May was for them. It was disastrous. In June, they were 13th with 97, July 19th with 98, August 23rd with 91. Then September, they've dropped off drastically again. So they're 27th with 70. The sort of the top end of the scale at the moment is about 115 in the majors for teams for the whole season. So we're not talking way over 100 they should be expecting, but they've been below 100 the whole year. They've got, if we look at qualified hitters, they've got four qualified hitters. That have a in fact, forget that stat. That doesn't make any sense. Beyond Goldschmidt and Peralta, there's not been a lot of hitting there at all. We spoke about Descalso last night and the fact that he had a good run, but it seems to have just dropped off completely. I know Ketel Marte also had a decent run as well. But they've only had they've got two hitters at the moment that are in the top 100 WRC plus of the season so far, and Ketel Marte is the next outside the top 100, 111th, and he's well below average with 92 as a WRC plus. The team has just been distinctly average, and I don't know if it's a reflection of the division and some of the opponents they've faced, but the fact that they're third, six games out this late in the season, is a bit of a shock to me. The big thing that's kept them going, though, is their starting rotation. They're eighth in, for the starters, they're eighth in team ERA. They are sixth in strikeout percentage and third in strikeouts. They're led by Patrick Corbin, who's had a stunning season with 3.09 ERA. And he's got 6.3 Fangraphs WAR. His walk rate is 5.6%. It's minuscule. And his strike rate is the eighth best in baseball, at 31%. He's just been incredible. And then Greinke, who everyone was getting a little bit worried about with that contract and previous season wasn't particularly great. He's been great as well. He's half the WAR of Patrick Corbin at 3.2, but he's still doing an amazing job there. Their relievers have been pretty piss poor, though. And I think that's another side of it. The hitting and the relievers have let them down quite a lot. You've got Brad Boxberger, Emoji King, who seemed to be doing so well at one point in the season and then has been taken out of the closer role completely. He's had seven blown saves during the season, and he's worth exactly 0.0 Fangraphs WAR at the moment. Going forward, well, they're out of the race for the division. Realistically, they're six games back, but realistically, they're not going to win the division with the Dodgers and the Rockies above them. And they're currently in a series with the Cubs, which they lost the game last night and scored one run and had four hits. They've then got the Rockies, the Dodgers, and the Padres to finish off. Darius, do you disagree with anything I've said there? I think they're done.
Yeah, I think they're done too. And it's kind of surprising because they were right in it. You know, it's not so long ago that they were the most likely team in this division to play the postseason. I'm just looking at the Fangraphs playoff odds right now, and it looks like as recently as August the 23rd, they had the best chance of any of these five teams to make the playoffs. They're up at 62.3% then, and that was like they were 65% the day before. So they've really dropped off fast. And while the Dodgers and the Rockies have kind of kept playing winning baseball, the Diamondbacks really haven't, and it can go away very fast in September when you know, as I think you said, they were 2-8 over their last 10. That's the kind of thing that drops you out of a race like this. So yeah, it's kind of disappointing that they've gone away so quickly. A lot of the success has been built on their defense, I think. And the fact that the lineup has been underwhelming, especially, you know, when you are relying on guys like Daniel Descalso, who has been a very useful utility guy over the course of his career, but he shouldn't be the third or fourth best hitter in your lineup. If that happens, you've probably got a problem. And it seems like that's caught up to them. The Humidor has certainly suppressed the run scoring. I'm just looking at the numbers now. It looks like Chase Field is 21st in the majors for home runs this year. And previously it was kind of the second best hitter's park in the majors after Coors, really. That and Texas were up there as kind of the leading candidates. So I think that has certainly affected some of those stats, like weighted runs created plus, which rely on older park factors. But even so, the lineup just hasn't been good enough outside of the guys like Goldschmidt. So yeah, it's disappointing to see them go away, really. I kind of wanted them to do well. I like Greinke. Corbin's done really well this season. I've been very impressed with him. But it just doesn't seem like they've got enough depth on that lineup. I guess it's just cost them at the wrong time.
Yeah, I'm just looking at their baseball reference page because they do a lot of team win-loss splits. If you haven't looked at this page, it's definitely worthwhile. First half, they had a plus, well, they had 546 win percentage. And the second half, they're looking at 455. In one-run games, their win-loss record is 18 wins and 29 losses. They're just getting hammered in close games. Interleague, they've been absolutely split, 500, 10 and 10. So it's not been too bad there. But yeah, that just looking at the stats now, in May, they won 8 games and lost 19. The win percentage is 296. Just killed their season there and then. Bearing in mind, in April, their win percentage is 720 and June was 679. You'd expect them to be up there. But I think anything like May just completely killed them. But then I suppose we'll come to him later. You look at the Dodgers, their start was absolutely abysmal. And now they're top of the division.
I was going to say, I remember all the hand-wringing, I think, you know, 2 or 3 weeks in, and the Diamondbacks were miles ahead and everybody was saying, are the Dodgers done already? Seager's gone.
Yeah.
This is over. And here we are, week and a half to go, and the Dodgers are in first place. So the good teams usually make it back one way or another.
Still a football quote. It's a funny old game, isn't it? I'm just looking at some of their records. Wow, they're 1-5 against the Brewers. That is terrible.
And I mean, the one run thing is, you know, generally speaking, pretty fluky. Most studies have shown that that's not all that sustainable. So if you know, flip that around or give them even a 500 record in those games, then they're stood in the race. But certainly the bullpen, especially Boxberger, is kind of broken down lately. And that has cost them a couple of really important games, I think.
And interestingly, they've got a winning record against everyone in the division except the Giants. They're 8-11 against the Giants this year.
So. Well, you don't deserve to make the playoffs in that case.
But yeah, they're just, I think, like you said then about the fact that everyone was just like parading them and saying how great they were. And it's such a strange, the whole game is just so strange, isn't it? The way it can turn so quickly. I think it was the start of last year. Everyone was talking about a White Sox Cubs World Series after the first month. And it's like, no, we've got a long, long way to go. It's just.
And, when you compare them to the Dodgers, and right now the Dodgers are like, we're not starting Cody Bellinger against lefties because he's not that good against them, because they've got so much depth they can afford to do that kind of thing. I mean,
yeah.
What are the Diamondbacks bringing off their bench in that kind of situation? They just don't have that.
I wonder if they miss JD Martinez. What do you do? The thing is, though,
there isn't a team in the majors who wouldn't miss JD.
The thing is with JD Martinez, though, if he'd stayed there and hadn't had the productive season because of the humidor or whatever it may be, people would have gone, oh, that's just a fluky year for him last year. Then he was clearly never going to do anything like that again. As a Red Sox fan, clearly it's nice to see him do so well, but also it's good to see him continue that and justify that deal he's got. Right then, shall we talk about the... what did we say then? Yeah, we said they're pretty much out of it, didn't we? We didn't bother with that. They are done. So let's talk about the Colorado Rockies. Now, there was a plan to have Ben on the podcast tonight, but unfortunately he couldn't make it. He had a last-minute arrangement he had to sort out, so he couldn't make it this evening. So what I asked him to do, though, is to prepare a statement because he's been in such a bad mood with the results recently. What are they? So let's have a look. They're 82-69. They are in second place in the division, and I'm struggling to get the page up. Are they 1.5 games back? They are, aren't they? They're 1.5 games back at the moment from the Dodgers. So here we go. Here's Ben's statement. Written on Apple Notes, like a true professional, when he's just leaving a team or joining a new team. So Ben's put this, life as a Rockies fan tends to consist of crushing lows interspersed with the occasional ecstatic highs. But yesterday's double whammy of Trevor Story's elbow blowing up and Chris, quote, seriously, that guy, Taylor, hitting a walk-off bomb is a real kick to the balls. As such, I'm taking an extended period of grieving and would appreciate some space during this difficult time. Unless the Rockies win tonight, in which case Rocktober is back on, # catch the fever. I didn't even know that was a hashtag. That is abysmal. That's almost as bad as the Red Sox one, which is do damage, which just sounds horrible.
Doesn't really. I mean, what does that mean?
Like,
doesn't feel that inspirational to me.
Are they encouraging violence? Is that what they're saying? Do damage.
It sort of seems like it, doesn't it?
I wonder if you can get away with that in a court of law. Anyway, let's talk about the Rockies then. They are very similar to the Diamondbacks. They've had quite an up and down year. I think Ben Lindbergh mentioned recently on the podcast, he's like, the Rockies are still in it. He was like genuinely shocked. He said, I thought they were done. And I was the same. I genuinely thought they were done. They're out of it. We're giving Ben some banter on Slack. And all of a sudden, they're 1.5 games back and still going. I mean, is this kind of a real statement to how bad the NL West has been this year? The fact that so many teams just keep cropping up back into it.
I don't think that, you know, they've actually been bad. I certainly don't think the Dodgers have actually been bad. You look at how many runs the Dodgers have actually scored. They should have a better record than they do, I think. And their run prevention has been pretty excellent. I mean, let's just have a quick look at this. I think the Dodgers have allowed less runs than the Astros have, maybe.
Oddly enough, that's projected.
So they've allowed more runs, but the projections actually think the Dodgers are still so good that they will allow less runs than the Astros the rest of the way. So that gives you some idea. I don't think the Dodgers should be in a race right now. The fact that they are is probably a bit about luck and maybe, yeah, a little bit of an indictment of how they've played certainly early on in the season. But yeah, it is shocking. And we say they're 1.5 games back. I mean, they're in first place a couple of days ago. So it kind of still jars me a little bit. And I've kind of been off the Rockies all year just because I kind of thought they're about the same as the Giants. And I didn't really think either of them were good enough to be in the playoffs. But to their credit, they have picked it up a bit. I think they've got some very good pieces in their rotation. Freeland has been outstanding. I really like Herman Marquez, who we were talking about in Slack earlier. He's going to get past 200 strikeouts. He's got some great stuff, great athlete. I think he's going to be a really good pitcher. And then Trevor Story has really picked it up. And unfortunately, it looks like his elbow is okay. So as long as he can recover quickly and get back on the field, hopefully he can get them in, at least into that wild card game. But I expect the Brewers and the Cards are going to have something to say about that as well.
There's been a lot of talk in fantasy circles about the fact that Charlie Blackman's not really produced as well as everyone thought he was done. I mean, he still produced 27 home runs. And what's his slash line at the moment? It's 287. .355 and slugging of .495. So it's not exactly that bad. Are we saying Jolly Blackman's on the downward trend now? Or
I mean, that's partly a cause thing, you know. The line sounds fine. If you told anybody that slash, you'd be like, yeah, great player in Coors Field. Not as exciting, really. And compared to Blackman's previous 2 years, obviously, this is actually a pretty big decline. So it's about the time that you would expect somebody really to drop off. He's 32 now. I don't see a huge decline in some of his, you know, plate discipline numbers or anything, but it certainly is the kind of time that you would maybe expect a player to start tailing off a little bit. And I think Blackman has to date exceeded a lot of people's expectations of what kind of player he would be. So we'll see how he gets on in the future. I think he's under contract with him for a long time, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. I was just looking then. 2023 he's done. Deal, so yeah. He's there for a while, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think fantasy players should worry too much because we don't apply park factors to our stats generally. I think he'll continue to be fine. But in Coors Field, that kind of line is actually not that much better than average. And so, yeah, it does kind of add up to a pretty underwhelming season for him overall. And I think the defence has gone downhill as well by the looks of things. So, yeah, not great. But I think in Arenado and Story, you've got two all-star potential MVP candidates on the left side of your infield, which is never a bad thing.
While I try and look at Charlie Button's home and away splits, do you think they haven't spent enough on the bullpen?
This has been the most fascinating thing to me about the Rockies all year long. I cannot fathom why you would spend $108 million on this bullpen. And I'm gonna like play a little bit of devil's advocate here because I kind of dug into this when I was writing the preview for them in the preseason, and a lot of like the between the lines stuff seemed to be suggesting that the front office think that these guys get better when they've had a bit of time to adjust. And so that's why they were giving all these guys like Wade Davis and Brian Shaw big multi-year deals. Jake McGee really improved in his second season in Coors after just having an awful first year. And kind of a lot of the comments from Jeff Breidich and the rest of the front office members who were talking to the press sort of suggested that maybe that was part of their strategy, that, you know, that they wanted these guys who were going to stick around for a bit, take some of the pressure off the starters and get used to pitching in Coors. Now, I'm pretty sure that McGee has been terrible again this year. Davis has been up and down, but certainly not peak Wade Davis. And even before this year, I think he was starting to tail off. Adam Ottavino, who did blow the game last night, has been pretty exceptional. But generally speaking, this is not a $108 million bullpen. And it's been the starters who have actually carried them. So, yeah, I'm dubious about the strategy, especially when you look at what the rest of the offense has done. I think Justin Mason, a friend of the pod, Justin Mason, pointed out earlier that Ian Desmond is on course to have the first ever 2020 season and still have negative WAR, which is incredible. Guy should not be playing first base. Fantasy owners love it still because he's actually been kind of a productive guy, but he should not be on a major league field, especially when you consider the Rockies actually have guys, young guys out there like Ryan McMahon, who could be playing this position. And maybe if they'd got a couple of extra wins, then they would still be in first place instead of playing Ian Desmond there all year. So, yeah, it's baffling to me. I still don't quite get it. And maybe they thought the rotation was just going to be a lot worse than it was, and they needed guys who could pitch a bunch of innings, quality innings out of the bullpen to cover for that. But I would personally much rather have saved 40 or 50 million of that and gone out and spent it on another piece for this offense, which, you know, might have just pushed them over the top.
To answer your question about Jake McGee, he has been quite bad. Strikeout percentage isn't too bad. It's 21.2%, walks 6.6%, but he's given up 1.86 home runs per nine. So that's pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, pitching in Coors is difficult. So
yeah,
I would be mean to Jake McGee. But I don't get the strategy. I think signing even two of those guys, because they brought back McGee, didn't they? And then they got Shaw and Davis in. And I think two of them would have been defensible. All three of them seemed very bizarre to me. And it doesn't seem any less bizarre given the results of the season.
Yeah. Brian Shaw has been slightly worse. Charlie Blackman's home road splits then. Home, as you'd expect, 337, 395, slugging 554, an OPS of 950 with a WRC plus of 126. Away from home, 242, 318, 440, an OPS of 759, WRC plus of 104. So there's a split. It's not a huge split, but there is a decent split, as you'd expect. Shall we? In fact, let's talk about their chances then. What do we reckon? So Fangraphs has currently got them at 36.4% for the playoffs. I think they control their own destiny at the moment, don't they, in terms of wildcard, etc.
I'm just going to have a quick look at their schedule, actually. Obviously, as Ben was saying earlier, they could really do with the win against the Dodgers tonight. We're talking on Wednesday right now. We should have this out before they actually play, I think. But if you're listening on Thursday morning or something, then you probably already know the outcome of that game. So if they can win that game, and obviously they'll just be half a game back again. They don't play the Dodgers the rest of the way. And I don't think they play... No, it doesn't look like they play the other wildcard contenders either. So it's possible that they could still be out of luck. But I expect that the Brewers and the Cardinals will be playing. Let's have a look at that.
I think it's all divisional stuff now. I think this late in the season, I remember chatting to Dave Shaw about this with the Phillies. In fact, no, tell a lie. So, so the Rockies are finishing at the Dodgers. Then it's Diamondbacks for a series, Phillies for a series. That's at home. So, and then the Nationals at home.
The Brewers and the Cards are going to play each other. For three games in St. Louis at the start of next week. So assuming the Rockies can just hang around, they know that, well, at least one of those teams is going to lose ground in that series. So that will also give them a bit of leeway. Right now, it might almost be easier to beat the Dodgers and try and chase them down just because they're slightly closer there. It's not a great spot to be in. I feel bad because, you know, they were in first place so recently. But at the same time, I have been saying all year that they weren't good enough to be in the playoffs. And I think the Cardinals and the Brewers probably are still better teams than them.
Do you know what? I know baseball's completely different and the Giants have done it a couple of times. But I kind of, in a way, if you're like limping into the playoffs and you haven't really shown you've got that one starter who can really light it up, especially at home as well when it comes to the Rockies. But it's almost like being the eighth seed in the NBA. It's like, you're not going to win it. Why are you here? And I know the Yankees did very well last year, but that was a completely different set of circumstances. But this is like the Rockies are going to almost drag themselves into the wildcard slot. And let's be brutally honest, they're not going to win the World Series.
That I hope that comes back to haunt you now.
If it does, let's come up with something. If it does,
if it does, Ben gets to pick your Twitter avatar for the entire off season. How about that?
Perfect, absolutely fine. As long as it's not offensive, Ben. As long as it's not offensive, it's not racist. It's not going to cause me issues. Let's try and keep it sensible.
Yeah, nothing that's going to get Tom banned from Twitter or fired from his job.
Or fired from my job, which is quite an important one. So they give me a house as well. They're 1.2%.
Don't make Tom homeless, but beyond that, whatever you like.
They're 1.2%. Their World Series win odds are 1.2% at the moment with Fangraphs. I think the only way to save myself here is to put a £10 bet on them to win the World Series right now, because I imagine the odds are going to be superb. So that'll make me feel better if Ben gets to pick my avatar. But yeah, I'll agree to that. They're not going to win the World Series. They are not going to win the World Series.
I think to defend the Rockies, I think that, as Ben said earlier in the Slack chat, you can make a very good argument that Freeland, Marquez and Gray could be a very good rotation. I think they've all got a lot of talent, and if they get on a good run, then, you know, anything can happen in the playoffs. And I'd probably rather take them than what the Brewers are likely to roll out there. And the Cardinals rotation hardly looks stacked right now either, with the injuries they've had. Carlos Martinez is in the bullpen right now. Obviously, they would have liked to have Alex Reyes there. He's not going to be there. So, you know, I think you could make the argument that they might have the best top three of those three teams. But when you compare the Brewers offense, for example, to the Rockies, it blows it out of the water.
Yeah, and if you look at the rest of the NL, they've got to get through all of that first before they then go and face the AL pennant winners, the Boston Red Sox. So, I mean, it's almost like, what's the point in going? You're just going to get swept.
I can't wait for the Astros fans to at you over this.
I'm expecting it. It's fine. You know what I'm like, though, when it comes to postseason. Just come out with their stupid hotcakes and let everyone just beat me down. It's fine. Shall we talk about the final team then, the Los Angeles Dodgers, who, as we've said many times at the moment, they're leading the division by 1.5 games. They've got a record of 84-68. And as we spoke about earlier as well, they had a horrendous start to the season, which then they have turned around completely. Some team stats for you then. They're leading the majors in walk percentage. They're second in the majors for home runs. They're fifth in WRC+. They lead the majors in hitting Fangraphs WAR. Their starters are fourth in Fangraphs WAR. Their starters are second in ERA. The thing that the part that's letting down, really, apart from injuries as well, has been their bullpen, which is 16th in Fangraphs WAR and 15th in bullpen ERA minus. So it's had elements where it needs to be better. I know Jansen went down with his heart problem as well. And is he back? No, he's still down, isn't he?
He's back. He's going to have surgery in the off season. I believe he has a strange condition that sends like random electrical signals that shouldn't be happening, that give him an irregular heartbeat. And so I believe they like cauterized it last time, like those particular cells that were sending the signals to stop it happening. And I guess it's something that can redevelop. So I believe he's going to have the same procedure again in the off season.
Yeah, I know, oddly enough, I know quite a few pilots that have irregular heartbeats. It's quite a normal thing. Obviously, if it's giving him problems as an athlete, you kind of want to get that sorted. I've just clicked on their team page for pitching and reliever stats for the year, and Kenley Jansen's leading the way with 0.8 WAR, which just shows you they've not really had anyone really stand out at the moment. It's been an okay season. It's not been great for the bullpen.
Yeah, that was, I think, an area that a lot of people kind of pointed to. And, you know, if you want to say the Dodgers have got a big weakness, that's where it is behind Jansen. There aren't a huge number of really high quality arms, especially when you compare them to, say, the Astros, who have just got, you know, even like the seventh best reliever on the Astros is outstanding. On the Dodgers, it gets rough pretty quickly. Now, counter to that is the fact that they're probably not going to be using their regular season bullpen in the playoffs. They've already put Kenta Maeda in the bullpen again. I expect we'll see a lot of him in the playoffs. I think you'll probably see a guy like Ross Stripling or Alex Wood end up in the bullpen. Julio Urias has come up and he's hanging around. So they've got a lot of options there. We saw Dave Roberts use starters in the bullpen frequently. Both the Astros and the Dodgers did it to great effect last postseason. And so I expect we'll see that again. So the fact that, you know, maybe, I don't know, Tony Cingrani, I think he's hurt anyway, but guys like that at the back end of the Dodgers bullpen haven't been great. Maybe I wouldn't worry too much about that, because I think, A, they've got a good rotation, and B, guys like Maeda are going to step in and pitch 2, 3, 4 innings if they do get in a hole in a playoff game. Assuming that, of course, that they actually get into a playoff series, which, you know, at 1.5 games up, I suppose we shouldn't talk like they are.
No, it's true. We shouldn't. And we've just debated whether the Rockies are going to get in there, and, you know, they potentially could. Yeah, I think that, like you say, there's been quite a few names like Kenta Maeda has gone into the bullpen. We've seen Rich Hill do a bit of time out of the bullpen as well. Who else has gone in there? Yeah, Ross Stripling's gone in there as well. So they've had so many issues that they've been throwing people in there. Starters-wise, though, I mean, it's quite nice to see Clayton Kershaw pitching well again.
Yeah, it's great to see him back. And I think he's not at the very peak of his powers. He walked 5 last night, which is not something you've seen Kershaw do very often. But of course, Kershaw not at his best apparently means a 2.45 ERA. So I think they're probably going to be okay. And the guy that I've really been impressed with, Stripling's been great, of course. And Hyunjin Ryu as well, when he's been able to pitch, has been outstanding. But Walker Buehler looks like the guy who's going to be the next ace on this team. Still incredibly young. I think he's maybe 23, 24, and this is his first real go at the majors. And he's got a sub-3 ERA, striking out nearly 10 batters per nine. He looks like a really high-quality starter. The one concern I would have with him if I was the Dodgers is that I don't think he's ever thrown this many innings in a season. And so you do worry if they go deep into the playoffs, what kind of wear and tear is going on his arm. And that may well be a situation where Dave Roberts is like, great, we've got four innings out of Walker. Let's go and hand it over to Maeda and hope he can take it all the way through to Jansen. Something like that.
Yeah. No, you're right. In a season, he's not done anywhere near this at all. Quick maths there. That's about 90 innings. So he's on 180 innings at the moment. Obviously, there's still season to go. I think he's pitching tonight as well, isn't he? So there's still plenty of the year to go. And yeah, he hasn't pitched anywhere near this. Did we talk about the Dodgers schedule? I can't remember if we did.
I don't think we specifically talked about their schedule, no.
Let's load that up then. So we know they're playing the Rockies this evening for their final game in that series. And then they have, it's going to be tough for them. They're going against the Padres. The Padres at home.
This is why we should say they're definitely winning the division, because they've got 10 games left and six of them against the Padres or the Giants.
they've got 10 games left. So they've got one game against the Rockies to finish off that series, which if they win tonight, they've swept the Rockies. Then they've got three against the Padres at home and then three at Arizona, three at San Francisco. Considering we've just written off Arizona and San Francisco and said they're looking quite bad now, I think the Dodgers are a lock. Can we say that yet?
I'm not going to say. I'd never say that a team is a lock with a lead of a game and a half. I think that's probably asking for trouble. And I think that the Rockies, do they have the game in hand as well over them? So if they do win tonight and then win that, then we're back to a tie. But it looks like it's lining up about as favorably as it could possibly be for the Dodgers right now. It looks like they're going to get to dodge the Diamondbacks' two best starters as well as things currently line up. And I think the Giants will play them tough that final weekend of the season, no matter what happens, because those series always have a lot riding on them, even if the two teams aren't actually competing for anything. But there's every chance, I think, that it will be over by then. And yeah, it couldn't be much better, could it? I mean, they're not playing the Orioles and the Royals, but in the National League, there aren't many teams other than the Marlins that you'd rather pick for them than San Diego and San Francisco.
No, I think that's pretty perfect for them. I think for the last 3 years, I've picked them to win the World Series. I think this might be the last year that I start picking them to do that. Again, I'm not convinced they're going to win the World Series. I'm going to try and quickly load up their playoff odds if I can. The playoff odds are 94.2%. So, yeah, they're as much of a lock as they can be when it comes to them winning the World Series. You check the odds there. But I don't know. I think this is kind of their last year for quite a few of the players, is it? I know Kershaw's got an option this year that always gets a mention. Can you see Kershaw taking that option?
I mean, I think he probably would get more on the open market.
It's not a bad deal he's on, though, is it?
Yeah, I think he gets about 60-odd million the next couple of years. So the bar is set high, but I guess the issue is, does he take that? And then when he comes out of that and he's 32, does he then think, oh, well, I'm going to have trouble getting much money. Whereas if he opts out now at 30, hopes that somebody gives him a, maybe not a Scherzer-like deal, because he's not quite been at his best the last couple of years, but something in that range. I mean, Greinke got an absolute ton of money, obviously. Would one of these teams, a team like the Phillies perhaps, who are kind of coming up on the win trajectory, maybe even a team like the Braves, who've got a ton of young players, and I know they have a lot of pitching, but maybe they say, well, we can use two or three of these pitchers, stack up our offense and bring in a real ace to lead this rotation. Maybe they would be tempted by something like that. So I think there would be people out there who would be perfectly prepared to pay Kershaw 30 plus million a year for a few years. But I think he's also quite a grounded guy. I know he likes it in LA. I'm not sure, you know, it's always really difficult to talk about these things and say what the players are going to want to do. I think he seems to quite like it in Los Angeles, and maybe that's more important to him than opting out and making a bunch of money. Maybe he'd rather the Dodgers just extended him and he got to stick around there. I think he would get the money. And so just on that basis alone, I'm guessing that he will opt out. But there are a lot of considerations that we don't really have any information about.
Yeah, I think it was Molly Knight's book and The Best Team Money Can Buy, where it does a big piece about Kershaw and the fact that I believe the Dodgers offered him something like a 10-year deal when he initially signed. Let me just double check. So you got a 7-year, $215 million contract, and that would have been in 2014 he got that. And it might have been even been 15 years they offered him, and he turned it down because he said to the team, I don't want to be a hindrance on your team. Which is quite an honourable thing to do when you think that, you know, he could keep earning money and just be out of the game completely. But he said, I don't want to do that to you. So he took a shorter deal, which, do you know what, maybe because of this exact reason that you said. So he's 30 this year. So in 2019, he's due to earn $34.5 million, 2020, $35.5 million. And then he's an unrestricted free agent at 33, as you said. So, yeah, now I've looked at it in that sense. It's quite unlike the David Price deal, which just seems to go on forever and ever and ever. And he'll just, you know, opt out if he doesn't like Boston, which at the moment he seems to like Boston and Boston seems to like him. So it's working quite well.
Right, but yeah.
Say again, sorry.
I said give it a month.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Wait until he gobs off about Eck again. So, yeah, I can kind of see it actually now you've said that. So, yeah, 30. He's 30 this year. If he opts out now. I mean, he's only guaranteed 2 more years with the Dodgers and then he could be done. So you could end up with a 5-year deal quite easily, I reckon, taking him to 35. I can almost guarantee that someone like the Red Sox would try and pay him for that. Or maybe even the Giants. Oh, can you imagine that? Kershaw pitching for the Giants.
Yeah, I don't know, if he would do that, knowing how it would go down. I'm not sure even the Giants would want to afford that, although I suppose... If you were going to go over the luxury tax, you might as well do it for somebody like Kershaw. I mean, I'm just thinking about Greinke because I think he was a similar kind of age when the D-backs signed him to that deal. And he got, looks like, $206 million over 6 years. And that was back in the 2015-16 offseason when he would have been 31, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't see the only reason that you wouldn't give that to Kershaw is because of the health concern. I think he has been better than Greinke over the course of his career, obviously. So maybe that offsets anything. It wouldn't shock me at all if somebody gave him 200 plus million over that kind of period. And for that, so yeah, it kind of seems like a no brainer for him to opt out. But yeah, you mentioned Molly's book and it did kind of paint a picture of Kershaw that he isn't really one of those guys who's just out there to get the money, maybe he would rather stay in LA and take the guaranteed money, or see if he can work out an extension with them.
As I said, David Price, he was 30 when he signed his deal, exactly the same. So as you say, 7 years, $217 million he signed for, with the opt-out starting next year. So he's 32 and it'll take him to his 36th season and he's a free agent at 37. He's got an opt-out every year, though. So even if he goes, you know what, I'll stay next year, and then doesn't like it again, he can just go, no, I'm done, finished. But yeah, I think you're right. He might do. You've turned me. I didn't think I'd agree with you, but yeah, you turned me on that one. Right, Dodgers World Series odds. Here we go. 18.8% according to Fangraphs. They're the second highest. I'm surprised by that.
I've seen a lot of discussion about this, like in the Effectively Wild group and that, and it's been pretty consistent over the course of the year, just because I think the National League teams they're going to have to get past are just that much less impressive than the teams on the AL side. And I guess it's the Cubs really that you would say, I'm sure Cubs must be second in the NL, right?
They are, but it's only 9.5%. So the only double figures team in the NL is the Dodgers at 18.8.
Yeah.
Whereas the AL, you've got Red Sox 15.5, Yankees 10.2, Indians 13-1 and Astros at 22-9. So, you know, everyone who's going to be into the postseason from the AL, apart from the Athletics, are double figures.
Yeah. So it's one of those things where it's just looking at, you know, those matchups, I think, in the playoffs. It's interesting that they are still there. I think they probably have a pretty high probability of making the postseason now, don't they? I know some people were saying, well, the Dodgers aren't even first, even in first place. Why have they got these high World Series odds? They are now in first place, I guess. But yeah, it doesn't surprise me that the Braves aren't particularly well favoured. They've not been great lately either, and they look like they might just be giving the Phillies a little hint of hope. I'm actually really interested because the Phillies get the Braves this weekend, and if they go and sweep that series, I've got to imagine the Braves are going to be absolutely crapping themselves going to the last week.
That'll be the Phillies three games back at that point.
Yeah, that's something I want to see this weekend, to make a game of that division, because the Braves just looked absolutely like they had it locked up and the Phillies were out of it. And so, yeah, I kind of like to see that come back. You know, not necessarily all the way, but to the point where we've actually got something still in play over the last few days. Sorry, Braves fans.
No, don't apologise. You've got to stick with it now. I've annoyed the Astros fans by saying there's no way.
I just want competitive baseball, you know. And I thought we were going to have like a 7-way wildcard tie, and now we might not have anything interesting at all. So
I just want everyone to have a chance. You need to watch more NFL. My God, there's been so many ties already. Well, so many. There's been two. It's unbelievable. Kickers just ruining the game for everyone. It's not an NFL podcast, although I'd like to do that. That'd be fun. So, yeah, I think we've wrapped up the NL West then. So I know the round table or oblong table or line has come quite late in the season. We're hoping to do a few more of these, but unfortunately, timings didn't really work for us.
Haven't we only got the AL Central to go now?
Did we do the NL East? Did John do the NL East?
I think he did, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure he did.
Yeah, and we've done the... Yeah, you're right, the AL Central. Do you want me to just get Russell on? And I'll just go, okay, the Twins are bad, Royals are bad, the Tigers are bad, the White Sox are bad. Talk to me about the Indians.
I think we have... I know there is somebody on the White Sox account, isn't there?
Yes.
Because they got very annoyed when I said that they were going to get smashed on the opening day of the season. So assuming that they're still around, maybe they would like to come on too and chat about their season. And you can talk to them about Yoan Moncada.
Oh, yes. I'm really slowly... I don't know if the people have realised this and seen the post that I put on the website, but I'm getting desperately obsessed with Yoan Moncada. I regularly now wake up and check the box scores for the Yankees to see if Stanton struck out, the White Sox see if Moncada struck out, and the Rangers see if Joey Gallo struck out. I'm just desperate to know who's going to win this strikeout race. I think Moncada's at 201 strikeouts at the moment, and Stanton's at 199. The record for the season was 224, if I'm right in saying that, Reynolds?
223 is Reynolds, yeah.
223. And Moncada was on pace at one point for 232 or something, so he's going to absolutely smash it. But he's gone through a little bit of a decent streak at the moment. I think he's batting 333 or something, and he's doing okay in the last eight games or so.
Yeah, it's really difficult to break this record, because to stay on the field all season while you're striking out that much and maintain that kind of pace is just very, very hard.
Who else have the White Sox got to put there?
What, the position?
Yeah, name me another White Sox second. Is he playing second or third? I don't even know.
He's been playing
second more
often. Yoma Sanchez can play second base. So they've got some flexibility in their infield there. That I know that Matt Davidson's obviously played some third, so they could play Sanchez at second and Davidson at third. That would give them an option.
I can't believe you can name some White Sox players.
I own Yoma Sanchez. this is the kind of thing I know. Also, after I've been updating the depth charts of BP, so guys that you've literally never heard of who are getting like playing time in September, and I'm like, oh, it looks like this guy's got four plate appearances over the last week. I better put him on the depth chart. So yeah, you get pretty into the weeds.
I'm liking that. You'd be pleased to know Yoan Moncada is leading off tonight. Yes, come on.
That gives him lots of opportunity. Who are they facing?
They are facing the Indians and Carlos Carrasco.
Oh, strikeout time.
Bam! The Rangers are playing at the moment. Let me just double check. This is so boring for everyone else. I'm so excited. Oh, what?
Yeah, he's got a toe issue. I don't think he's
been. So sick. Are we officially ruling him out of the strikeout crown?
Yeah, I think. I mean, you know, he could like do a couple of golden sombreros or something. But yeah, this is the kind of year where teams are just like, yeah, we'll let him sit out for 5 days, whatever. If especially the Rangers who are not in it. So I could absolutely see Gallo being finished for the year now. But the Yankees still have something to play for, so I don't think Stanton's going anywhere.
No, Stanton's not going to cool down. Clearly, postseason strikeouts do not count. It's regular season only. Yeah, but I'm seriously excited. I think it's going to be this is the race that I'm looking forward to at the end of the season.
What about Andrew Benintendi versus Malik Smith?
Oh, yeah, of course. For people who don't know the bet that happened with myself and Rob Navarro, or if people aren't even interested, just turn up now. Find us on Twitter, Facebook. I'm going to tell you anyway. So myself and Rob Navarro had a bet at the start of the season. He wanted to bet that Malik Smith would have more stolen bases than Andrew Benintendi by the end of the year. And I said, no, that's not really that fair. And then Darius kindly mentioned, well, why didn't you have home runs plus stolen base? And I thought, oh, this could be good. Because Malik Smith's going to hit pretty much zero home runs and Benintendi's going to get a good spread across the board. I don't know if you got the numbers there, Darius, so I was just quickly going to try and load them up.
Benintendi has 16 homers and 20 stolen bases, and yeah. Malik Smith has 2 homers and 33 stolen bases. So Malik needs 1 to tie. He hasn't got one yet tonight. The Rays are absolutely thrashing the Rangers right now. But he does already have 4 at-bats through 6 innings, so he's going to get another turn.
And Benintendi's getting lots of rest at the moment, which clearly I'm happy as a Red Sox fan, but distraught at the fact that Rob Navarro might win this bet. And do you know what? Again, it's another one of these that I can't even remember what the bet was.
I thought you said that you had to move the trop brick by brick.
Oh, yeah.
You guys should come up with a more realistic forfeit.
Twitter avatar for a month. I think that's fair. Rob, tweet me if you're happy with that. I'm happy at the moment, even though I think I'm going to lose. I'm also going to lose my bet against Justin Mason because he's going to beat me in the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational. But I don't think... Oh, no, definitely not. I'm not going to lose my bet with... Mike Shipley for the Blue Jays having a worse record than the Phillies. So every cloud and all that. Happy days.
And I don't think, as much as it pains me to admit it, that Bryce Harper is going to hit 9 home runs in the next 10 days.
If he goes on a tear now, I'm going to be quite sad. And again, I forgot about that bet. What was that one? Did we say £5 for a charity or something?
I think we just said £5, but I can give it to a charity if you like.
Give it all to Mission 108. And for people who don't know yet, we were going to be wearing blue at the next meetup, but we don't seem to be getting a donation. So if you want to see people wearing, well, Darius and Ben wearing Dodgers blue and myself and John wearing Blue Jays blue, then you need to start donating. It's pinned at the top of our Twitter page. This is a lovely segue. And you can find us on Twitter at @batflips_nerds. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/batflipsandnerds. And you can find our lovely website, www.batflipsandnerds.com, where we've got lots of new writing, including me being obsessed about Yoan Moncada strikeouts. Darius, this has been brilliant. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. You can find my fantasy writing over at Baseball Prospectus. I've nearly wrapped up my great fantasy baseball waiver wire project based on the TGFBI leagues that Tom and myself are both in. So that the second to last installment of the season was up today. And you can also find me updating the depth charts there. So if things are wrong, then tell me. I've been helping with that. It's very difficult this time of year because stuff just comes out of nowhere. And also, it doesn't really matter that much. But I'm kind of trying to get used to it anyway. So do let me know about that. And I also do a fantasy freestyle every other Friday there. I haven't got one this week. I did have one last Friday. So if you are still in a league and you're trying to win, I shared some tips for how you might want to do that. It's all about getting a bit more ruthless at the end of the season, basically. So check that out.
Yeah, the guys on the Fangraphs fantasy pod sleep in the bus today. Well, not today, maybe a couple of days ago because I'm catching up. We're talking about cutting the likes of Carlos Correa and stuff like that, which I'm not entirely sure I would do. However, I can understand what they were saying.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing that I'm talking about. And it's the kind of thing that the rest of the season we would obviously tell you were mad, but you have to kind of get in a different mindset of, is this actually going to help me win my league now? You know, I need stolen bases or whatever it might be. And these are the only players who are going to help me win it. So you just have to kind of think, look at the standings, figure out how you get the points. And if it means cutting Carlos Correa, then go and cut Carlos Correa.
I've still got Clay Buchholz on my DL. I can't get rid of him. He sat there and I just look at him all sad. You're Carlos, no. Carlos, no. Clay Buchholz. So yeah, I'm also in Justin's two early mock drafts. Oh my god, why did I do that? I'm doing a draft for the 2019 season already.
Yeah, you know you're mad when. How is your mock going, Tom?
It's going okay. It's been pretty slow, as you'd expect. I took Whit Merrifield in the fourth round. I was like, oh, is that a bit too early? And then I heard Justin Mason saying on a podcast, if you take him in the fifth round, sorry, I got him in the fourth round. If you take him in the fifth round, it's an absolute steal. And I was like, oh, that's all right. Then I feel quite good about that now. It's going okay. Are you doing one as well then?
I am doing one. Yeah, I'm in mock number six. And I seem to be getting a lot of the kind of, I guess, less exciting. I don't know if less exciting is the right term. A lot of the older guys, and we've had some pretty out there picks. I think Vlad Jr. went about 50th overall.
Wow.
He's going to get some serious hype. If you thought Ronald Acuna's hype in draft season was nuts, wait until you see Vlad Jr. next year. So I've got guys like Votto, obviously. Got Votto at 54th, which I was pretty pleased with.
Mm.
I've got Lorenzo Cain round after him. I've just picked up Tommy Pham. Got Gerrit Cole and Chris Sale at the top of my rotation. I've got Manny. I don't care where Manny ends up. He was my first round pick. And then I've bet on Cody Bellinger again in the fourth round because he's still like 22, I think.
Stick with him.
People probably forget he's like only 22. But yeah, I know his season hasn't been amazing. But yeah, I kind of think that he'll grow a bit and learn a bit more about hitting. And he still gives you power and speed. So yeah, that's how mine's going so far.
So my first round pick was Max Scherzer. I kind of panicked and was stuck between Max Scherzer and Chris Sale. And I was like, do you know what? Scherzer's pretty, pretty solid. I can feel quite confident in taking him and I'm happy with that. But I caused the closer rush. I didn't think it was going to happen, but I caused it because I've gone through so many seasons where I try and pick up a closer late and it's just way too late. And this season I really struggle with saves, seriously. So I took Edwin Diaz in the fifth round, the 57th pick. And all of a sudden all the closers went straight away. I was like, yes, I've caused it. I didn't realize that was going to happen. But I've got Noah Syndergaard, Max Scherzer, Edwin Diaz, Nelson Cruz got in the sixth round, Eddie Rosario, Whit Merrifield, Matt Chapman, just for you in the seventh round, and Javier Baez, who I took in the second, I think. Yeah, second, 16th pick. Yeah, it's really good talking about my own fantasy team and your fantasy team for teams we're not even going to play with. They're just gone.
People hate hearing about even more than people's fantasy teams, people's fake fantasy teams that they're not actually going to play out.
I'm glad I warned people off to just leave at this point in the podcast. I've been your host, Tom Pringle. You can find me on batflips_nerds, tweeting on there, or my own account, generally putting photos, my own daughter on there, or trying to mock Justin Mason at all times. Thanks for joining us. Please rate and review us. Remember, there's still the Blue Jays hat and the Dodgers shirt competition that's going on for the best review. I think John's waiting for 50 reviews or something like that, so it's going to take a while. But get those reviews in there, because if you throw in a review, hopefully a five-star one, you'll be added to the draw automatically for that. So, yeah, I think we're done. I'm going away for a while now, so you won't hear my dulcet, brummy tones for a long time. See ya.